As the saying goes, to err is human. Every makes mistakes. Some are big, some are small. But to really mess things up, you need a credit card. Misusing that little piece of plastic is one of the easiest ways to create financial turmoil in your life by going into debt and trashing your credit along the way. Today, Kingdom Advisors President Rob West explains just how that happens. Then it's your calls at 800-525-7000, 800-525-7000. 8 credit card mistakes to avoid. Next, right here on MoneyWise Live. Well, Rob, credit card debt is very high in the U.S., but it does tend to go up and down with the economy, but not necessarily in the way you'd think. So fill us in here.
Well, that's right, Steve. We've talked before about how the level of consumer debt has an inverse proportion to the state of the economy. When the economy is healthy and unemployment is low, credit card debt goes up, probably because people assume they'll have the money to pay that debt off later. But when the economy falters, folks have a tendency to stop charging things and to pay down their consumer debt. It seems counterintuitive, but it really isn't. If you're worried about your job, it's natural to want to reduce your debt.
But our goal here is to encourage listeners to avoid credit card debt in the first place, or at least to pay it down quickly if you already have it. So what about those 8 mistakes we should avoid?
The first one, Steve, is letting yourself be pressured into getting a credit card if you don't already have one. This often happens in department stores where the sales staff offers you a discount on your purchase if you sign up for the store's credit card. Store cards often have horrendous interest rates, so don't be fooled. The first month you fail to pay off the card in full, they'll make back that discount you received and then some. So just say no thank you.
Okay, so you're saying that maybe I shouldn't have gotten that piercing pagoda credit card?
Yes, and for so many reasons, Steve Moore.
Oh, yeah. Marcia was full of questions for me, but
I'm sure she was, absolutely. All right, mistake number 2 is so obvious we shouldn't have to say it, but we do, because so many people have credit card debt, it's spending more than you can afford. A credit card is, of course, not free money. It's a loan, usually at high interest. A pizza could end up costing you hundreds of dollars if you carry the charge in your account for months or even years.
That's right. Well said. Okay, what's next?
Well, mistake number 3 is opening several credit accounts in a short period of time. That will lower your credit score and make any kind of borrowing more expensive.
Why would someone do that?
Well, any number of reasons, but a common one is not having an emergency fund. Then when you have a financial calamity like a job loss, you rely on credit cards for living expenses, which would probably lead us to mistake number 4, Steve, and that is maxing out your credit cards. You see, whenever you carry a balance on a card that's more than 30% of your available credit, well, it'll lower your score. Mistake number 5, then, is not paying your bills on time. Late payments will go on your credit report. That lowers your credit score and costs you late fees.
I'm seeing something of a cascading effect here, and it all starts with not having a budget or an emergency fund. One mistake then leads to another and another, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right, which leads us to mistake number 6, which is applying for another credit card if you already have a balance on one. Larry Burkett used to say, as you know, Steve, go ahead and use a credit card, but the first month you don't pay off the balance in full, chop it up.
Okay, still very wise words. And then what's next? I think it's number 7 here.
Yeah, mistake number 7 is ignoring the warning signs of debt. Those signs are, as we said, paying only the minimum, but then there's getting cash advances on your credit card, perhaps paying late, using your credit card for living expenses, and any number of other scenarios. Any one of those, Steve, will get you into trouble.
That's right. And I think we have time for number 8. What do you have there?
Well, our eighth and final credit card mistake involves identity theft. That is giving out your credit card number if you haven't initiated the transaction. Scam artists use any number of tricks to get you to do that. They'll say they're with the IRS or even the Social Security Administration. Oftentimes, some of the most common scams involve threatening you with jail time or the loss of benefits for Social Security unless you make a payment over the phone with a credit card. Those agencies will never do that, so don't fall for it.
And as we've said many times in the past, credit cards are not really the problem. A little hard to live without them entirely, but it's the management of credit cards that's the issue. You're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. Your call's next, 800-525-7000.
Would you like your life to be infused with joy? Would you like to interject an eternal dimension into even the most ordinary day? Author Randy Alcorn says you can when you discover The Treasure Principle. In a concise, power-packed style, this newly revised and updated book offers a six-step plan to finding the immediate pleasure and eternal rewards of The Treasure Principle. And once you discover it, life will never look the same. The Treasure Principle is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
When it comes to investing guidance, you want advice grounded in God's Word. That's the approach offered by Sound Mind Investing. SMI has helped tens of thousands of Christians acquire investing wisdom and confidence. Regardless of your investing experience or how much you have to invest, you can learn to be a wise and faithful steward in the area of investing. A short video webinar on profit and peace of mind is available now at soundmindinvesting.org.
Hi, I'm John Erickson Tata, and I use a bent spoon to feed myself. When I need a new one, I take it to the hardware store so they can bend it for me on a vise in the back room. The hardware guy named James, he started working with the new spoon, all the while I kept explaining why I needed his help. I told him about my broken neck and depression and how Jesus rescued me. When I finished sharing my story, he looked up and explained he was once a lifeguard and rescued a man like me who broke his neck diving in the waves. And so James told me, I want to read your book. I want to hear more about your rescue and how God saved you. Man, I love the way the Johnny book opens conversations with people. People who've been involved with pain and hardship. So think about getting a copy and keeping it handy, because it's a great way to share your story of rescue as well. Just visit our store at johnnyandfriends.org. Again, that's johnnyandfriends.org.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on Money Wise, God's Wisdom for Your Finances. If today is the first day you've listened, I'm not sure how that would happen. Maybe you were looking for the local country western station and you found us. Well, perhaps it's a godly appointment. So we'd urge you to hang around, stick around, give us a call if we can help you with your money in any way. 800-525-7000. Rob, isn't it cool? I mean, we're on probably in at least 48 of 50 states with this program. Isn't it cool to think that on any given day, someone's listening to us in Northern California, maybe Maine, Florida, Nebraska. We get calls from Puerto Rico. I just think it's so cool because I'm an old guy. And when I was a boy, nothing like that was possible.
Yeah, it's so true, Steve. Not only with terrestrial radio, but on the internet and podcast all over the globe. So wherever you're listening today, we're grateful that you've tuned in.
Indeed. For the last couple of days, we've been involved along with all the wonderful people at Moody Radio and the Moody Bible Institute in helping raise money for students, incoming students to the Moody Bible Institute. And we want to thank all of you who are MoneyWise listeners for your generosity. It really helped put us right at the very top, and may God bless you for your generosity. All right, let's go to Madisonville, Kentucky. Hey, Kathy, what's on your mind?
I was just wondering what you thought of a cash. It's like KASASA checking accounts, where you have to keep a large sum of money in it, and you get a high interest rate, and you got to make so many debits a month. What you thought of those?
Yeah, Kathy, you know, I'm always interested in having the opportunity to earn more, whether it's in the form of a high yield savings account. So with the traditional brick and mortar banks paying, you know, a fraction of 1%, the ability to earn through an online savings account, let's say 1%, the best you'll find right now is 1.05%. You know, I like that because, you know, they're not having to pay to keep all those brick and mortar operations going, and they're able to pass that along in the form of no fees and higher interest rates. You will find some similar opportunities on the checking side, and Kasasa is one of those. This is a financial services company that basically offers white label banking services to small community banks and credit unions, which allows these smaller banks to compete with the online banks by using less paper, but also subsidizing higher interest rates through the debit card transaction fees. Their vanilla high interest checking has a way for small banks even to offer cash back on debit purchases, which is rare for any bank. Normally you'd see cash back on credit, but not necessarily debit. So with that cash back product, you get some percentage of cash back up to some limits. I think the key is just making sure you understand what are the requirements. Is there a monthly fee? Do you have to, you know, pay a transaction fee on those debit card purchases? And if so, how much does that amount to versus what you're going to earn in the way of rewards? And then what about those minimums? Are you actually able to keep that average daily minimum balance high enough even throughout the month in order to earn these rewards? But I don't have any problem with this particular a banking option offered through these credit unions. In fact, it can create a really compelling offer beyond what you'll see, you know, most other places. In fact, you know, I know they have some introductory rates even as high as 4%, which you won't find anywhere else. So bottom line is, I like it. Just make sure you understand the requirements and make sure you can meet them before you move forward.
Rob, what's white label banking?
Basically, where a financial services company will come in and allow the bank to put their name on that particular product. So they can make the product available, the financial product, the banking product, and the local community bank can make it their own, their name, their logo. But it's actually offered through Kasasa Bank in this case, which is behind all of these other banks.
Okay. Kathy, does that help you? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was just wondering if I thought it was safe. You know, we only talk about credit cards being safer than checking debits, because I was just wanting to know what you thought kind of in that direction.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, as to the safety, I mean, it would have all the safety provisions that any other debit card would have. We have talked in the past about the fact that we do like credit cards, assuming you're using it only for budgeted items. You've demonstrated you can pay it in full every month. I like the security features of credit cards better than debit cards, just because if somebody were to access or compromise your account, they're charging against the credit card. As long as you report it in a timely manner, you're not responsible. You have some similar protections on the debit card. The problem is they can clean out your bank account before you figure it out. And then you're, you know, running overdraft fees, and you've got to just clean up the mess that that creates, even if you're, you know, if they bring restitution to pay all of that back, there's going to be a period of time where you're without the money. So there is a benefit, I think, on the credit card side. So just understand the difference between the two.
Mm. Kathy, great questions. We're glad that you called today. Thank you. Merrillville, Indiana. Carlita, how can we help you?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. My question is this. How do you know if you should refinance during a time in crisis that we're in? Should you refinance? My is at 6.5, and the balance is like between 64,000 and 67,000 left. And so I'm like, do I maintain the course, or do I seek refinancing, or does that cost? Because if anything costs, I wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah, Carlita. You know, it really, in this case, I don't think it really has a lot to do with whether there's a financial crisis or not going on. It really comes down to what are the terms you have on the current interest rate and loan, and what could you replace it with, and then a few other considerations about how long you plan to stay in the home. So let's dive into this for a second. You mentioned you have an interest rate of higher than 6%, about 6.5%. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And how many years did you take the loan out for, and how many years are left, roughly?
30. And so I think it's about, 5 to 6, something
okay.
like that.
You have 5 to 6 left, or you've been in it 5 to 6 years?
No, I've been in it for 22 years.
Okay, yeah. So you only have about 5 years left.
Yes,
Okay,
exactly.
All right. Yeah, and what is the balance on that mortgage?
It's 60, I'm going to give it the highest, 67, but it's between that, between 65 and 67.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you're in a unique situation here just because you've been in this mortgage so long. You know, typically with a rate around 6.5, we'd say absolutely go ahead and refinance. You're going to get a rate, assuming you have a credit, you know, a good credit score north of, let's say, 720, even something higher than 650, you should get somewhere around a 3% rate. You know, you wouldn't want to go more than a 10-year mortgage. And even that, I'd want to make sure you were sending more than the minimum payment so you could pay it off in no more than the 6 years you had remaining on the current mortgage, but you'd only want to do it if you could pay it off in that same period of time and pay less overall interest, and that's after paying for the cost of the refinance. You're going to pay between 1% and 2% for the refinance. So on a $70,000 mortgage, you're going to pay somewhere between $700 and $1,400 for the refinance itself. The question is, how much are you going to save in interest every month on an interest rate that potentially could be cut in half? And over the next 6 years, could you save more than $1,500? You know, could you save, you know, $5,000 or $6,000? And so even though there'd be a period of time where you're just paying off, so to speak, through the saved interest, you'd be paying off the cost of the refinance. Once you did that, then every month you'd have money back in your pocket in the form of a lower interest rate. The key, though, is we wouldn't want to string the term out longer, because if you go from a 6-year payback to a 10 or a 15-year, even though the interest rate has been dramatically reduced, you could end up paying the same or more in interest. So it really would be, in your case, something you'd need to look into just to see what kind of rate could you qualify it for on a 10-year mortgage, taking no cash out, but only getting what you had now. And if you made the same payment you're making now, what would the payback look like in terms of the number of years and the total amount of interest? So I would check that out. Perhaps you go online at bankrate.com, look for a few lenders there offering some of the most competitive rates, get a disclosure for Truth in Lending giving you all of the costs, look at the monthly payment, the total interest, and compare it to what you have now and just see whether it makes sense. I suspect it will, as long as you follow those rules that I just laid out.
Carlita, we certainly hope that helps you. We're glad you called today. 800-525-7000. Jot it down. Give us a call.
God cares a great deal more about our money than most of us imagine. In fact, Jesus says more about our use of money and possessions than about anything else, including both heaven and hell. In Managing God's Money, author Randy Alcorn breaks it all down in a simple, easy-to-follow format that makes it the perfect reference tool if you're interested in gaining a solid biblical understanding of money, possessions, and eternity. Managing God's Money is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
God has ordained that every single one of these must render themselves useful. If they cannot profit, they do not get a permit. Whatever we have ever gone through, if there was no way that God could bring glory, His glory, and your good out of it, it would have gotten a no. And you and I got to know today that there really are, can we just have a moment together and just really honestly admit that there really are some things we've not been through. Really, for the most part, it seems like every single one of us have been through everything there is to go through. And we feel like that individually. We just think, we have been through it, haven't we? But there again, couldn't we sit here and just really be real for a moment and say we actually have not been through everything? Praise God. There may be three things in life we have not yet been through. There really are some things, because some things just flat get a no. There really are some things the enemy asks to do with your life that he gets a no to. Difficult things. It really was meant to be worse than it is. It was really meant to be worse. The enemy asked for more. So, okay. What we did get, it is a proven fact that glory can come to God and good can come to us.
Beth and the team are thankful for the grace gift to serve you. Your letters, prayers, and support are a vital part of this program. To request this month's thank you gift, text the word gift to 57682. Again, text GIFT to 57682 or go to BethMoore.org/donate. That's BethMoore.org/donate.
Buying a home is the largest, most nerve-wracking purchase most of us ever make. It doesn't help that you're entering a maze of unfamiliar words and confusing options that can leave you intimidated, frustrated, and afraid you've been taken advantage of. Navigating the Mortgage Maze by Dale Vermillion helps you clear up the confusion, unrack your nerves, and make the best mortgage decisions possible with confidence. Navigating the Mortgage Maze, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org. How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the
800-525-7000. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, or even a song, if you want to come in with some little ditty you'd like to share with us, we're all about that. 800-525-7000. Nancy from Missouri wants to know, Rob. She says, with everything going on right now, her husband and she have had to save and be frugal. Now they're retired, mid-70s. They've accumulated extra money. They have concerns about the safeguard of their money, which is around $100,000 in the bank. Any thoughts in that regard?
Well, I assume, Nancy, what you're referring to when you say everything going on right now is just obviously the uncertainty related to the pandemic and the recession that was brought on very quickly. In fact, the fastest in history, although we moved out of it about as fast, and we're no longer in a technical recession just based on the way the economy has bounced back and the market has certainly led in advance of that, which you would expect. In terms of being concerned about the safety of your funds in the bank, as long as you have FDIC insurance, I wouldn't be concerned if it were me. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is basically an independent agency of the U.S. government. It's going to protect you against the loss of your insured deposits as long as you're in an FDIC-insured bank or savings association. It's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government, and we've seen Congress Congress step in times past and offer unlimited guarantees. So I wouldn't have any concern about the failure of a bank or being able to get to your funds. And really, frankly, I don't think we're in that kind of situation right now where, even though we're taking on massive amounts of debt in this country to fund all of the stimulus and the injection into the economy and to increase the money supply, so there's liquidity in the system. We have a very strong economy. We have a very strong consumer. And, we still, I think, are going to be able to lead our way out of this quite well. And, I wouldn't be concerned about a collapsing dollar or any kind of, major unrest like that in the financial system. What we experienced in 2008 and 2009 really had systemic problems. That's not what we're experiencing here. This is really an event-driven, a financial problem that was brought on by the virus, simply. Not anything else that's more systemic in our financial system. So I think where you have your money, as long as it's in an FDIC-insured account, is probably exactly where it should be. I would be looking at one of the online banks to get a little bit more interest on that $100,000, but I wouldn't have any concerns about its overall safety.
Yeah, nothing wrong with being concerned, though, Nancy. Better than sticking your head in the sand and not following how all this plays out. And obviously, keep the situation in your prayers. We're glad that you contacted us today. Let's go to Leesburg, Florida. Hey, Thomas, we appreciate you hanging on. What can we do for you?
Yes, it's been about 10 plus years since I've had any credit cards. And I opened up a secured card with $200 about 6 to 7 months ago. And I just recently was told that my credit line was raised to $1,500. And my credit score started at about 580, went to 741. And when I received the raise of my credit line, it said my credit score dropped 20 points. And I was doing everything that I felt was right. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why my credit line improved. And my score kept improving every month, and all of a sudden it drops 20 points. Is there anything I can do about that, and how can I get it to an 800?
Yeah. Well, Thomas, I wouldn't be terribly concerned about that. Number one, the fact that you were so low prior to this is probably because you had a lack of credit. Having this new secured card brought you up because now you have something being reported every month. But the fact that they raised it to $1,500 and you only had $200 on deposit tells me they closed that account and are offering you a traditional credit card account with a traditional credit limit beyond what's on deposit, which was the secured nature of it. That process of closing one and opening another took away the active account that you had, which results temporarily in a decline. But as long as you keep paying on time, you'll be just fine. That score will bounce back, and just keep following biblical principles and managing God's money wisely, and you'll be rewarded for it.
Thomas, you're doing a great job. Thanks. We'll be right back with more Money Wise Live after this.
How should we as Christians think about investing? What if we could invest our money in a way that aligns with what we believe? At Eventide, we believe it is possible to love God and love our neighbor in the very practice of investing. We design investments for performance and a better world so you can invest for the future with a sense of wholeness and purpose. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
Hi, I'm Clara, a communications student here with the Moody Bible Institute Verse of the Week. It's found in Isaiah 54:10. For the mountains may depart and the hills be removed, but my steadfast love shall not depart from you, and my covenant of peace shall not be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. That's Isaiah 54:10, the Moody Bible Institute Verse of the Week.
Long for something good, true, and secure. There's a hunger for a hope that goes beyond politics and entertainment and reaches deep into our souls. That hunger can only be satisfied by Jesus. For more than 90 years, Moody Radio has faithfully delivered that message of hope to millions so they can take the next step in their walk with Christ.
Call 1-800-DL-MOODY or visit moodyradio.org.
Money and life run on the same track, but unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. Top administration officials made the announcement this hour. They will recommend President Trump move forward with executive orders to address the economic fallout from the coronavirus, as negotiations on Capitol Hill have apparently broken down. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said that he and Mark Meadows will, quote, recommend to the president, based upon our lack of activity today, to move forward with some executive orders. President Trump welcoming the latest jobs report, the adding of 1.8 million jobs in July, was a positive development. The president tweeted, great jobs numbers. The unemployment rate is down to 10.2%. Stocks finishing mixed today. The Dow gained 46 points. The NASDAQ, though, down 87. The S&P 500 was up 2 points. This is SRN News.
And welcome back. Here's something for you from 1 Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 6:12. All things are lawful to me, but not all things are profitable. Elyria, Ohio. Hi, Elizabeth. What's your question for Rob West?
Hello. I'm thinking of going part-time because I have young children, and with all the schools becoming online right now, it's going to be a little hard working full-time. I do have about $200,000 in savings, and I was wondering what is the best way to invest that money so I can supplement the lost income.
Yeah. Elizabeth, tell me a bit more about your situation. Do you all have any debt to speak of?
No, I have no debt. Everything has been paid off.
Okay, very good. And how long do you plan to continue working?
As of now, I was not planning to stop. It's only because of schools going online. So if schools go back, I will probably go back into full-time work again.
Okay. And do you have a retirement plan through the school system?
I'm not a teacher. I do have a retirement plan through my work.
Okay. Very good. And, I see. So when you're talking about the schools being online, obviously you're having to go part-time to care for the kids, not because you're working in the school system. Very good. And so your retirement plan that you have, you feel like you're on track with that in terms of the amount you're putting aside and what will be there for the future. And this $200,000 you're speaking of is separate and outside of that, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. A couple of options here. I mean, if we were to try to generate an income off of this, we would typically use a number of around 4%. So, with a $200,000 account, if you were to try to draw, an income without impacting the principal, investing in a fairly conservative way, that would generate about $8,000 a year. And that would be fairly reasonable to think that you could cover that $8,000 and not ever see the principal decline. If you needed more than $8,000 a year, you would either have to take more risk, which could, put you in a situation where you actually, had a principal loss because, there was a market downturn or something like that and you couldn't wait it out. You could potentially just be eating into the balance by investing conservatively, but taking more than you're returning in the way of interest and dividends. And therefore, over time, that $200,000 would be declining because the investment returns would just simply not be enough to outpace it. So let's start there. Would roughly $8,000 a year cover what you're looking for, or do you need more than that?
I think I'll probably need Around 15.
Around 15. Okay. So you'd be talking about needing about an 8% return, which would be more than we would expect to take when we're in an income and capital distribution phase as opposed to capital appreciation. So you've got a couple of options there. Number one is you could invest it more aggressively, just recognizing that in order to try to achieve an 8% return, you're going to have to take more risk. And so if we went through a period like we did, you know, last spring, the market was down very quickly, you know, 30%. Now, it came back quickly, but, you know, if you opened your statement one quarter and the 200,000 was also all of a sudden 140,000, you know, would you feel compelled to sell those investments to shore up what you have? Or would you be able to wait that out and let that come back? It may come back in a couple of months like it did this year, or it may take a year or two or three, like previous bear markets have done. So I think this all comes down to risk and reward. How much risk are you willing to take for how much reward? And if you don't want to assume that kind of risk because you're living off of it, then you just have to recognize, based on the amount you're looking to pull out of it, that balance is not going to be able to keep up. And therefore, it's going to be declining for as long as you need to use it. So tell me your thoughts on that as you reflect on what I just said.
I think I'm just praying that the kids go back to school.
Yes, ma'am, I understand. You know, typically what we would say is, you know, in this kind of situation, we would not typically want to put a long-term investment plan in place for money that you're living on today. And so what I would probably recommend is that you go see an investment professional there in Ohio. If you don't have one, I'd go to our website, moneywiselive.org, click on Find a CKA. I'd interview two or three and find one that's going to be able to put an investment plan in place that's focused on income creation and capital preservation. And just recognize for this season, however long it is, and hopefully it's brief, you're going to be pulling out probably more than you're making up through interest and dividends and capital appreciation. But you also wouldn't be taking a lot of risk either. And you could reevaluate over time and decide, you know, how you want to course correct as we know more about how long this season is going to continue while the kids are out of school. But the bottom line is you have a significant asset. There's no reason you can't earn some interest. I just think you're probably not going to want to try to earn as much as you need to take out, because I would just be uncomfortable with that amount of risk, if that makes sense.
Elizabeth, we appreciate your phone call today, and we wish you and your family the very best. Thank you. South Haven, Minnesota. Catherine, what's on your mind today?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. We just received a $55,000 inheritance, and we want to do the best thing with it, and we don't know what that is. All our only outstanding debt is our mortgage, which is at $75,000 approximately.
Okay. Catherine, are you or your husband still working?
Yes, we're both 57, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, and my husband is working.
Okay, and do you have an emergency fund?
We have $15,000 in our savings.
Okay, and what would you say roughly, if you were to total up all of your expenses in a given month, what would that be roughly?
You know, my husband does all of that important stuff. I know that it's probably about four. We have four children still living at home, so perhaps $4,000.
Okay. Let's just say it's around 5,000, right? we'll just ratchet it up just a little bit. So if we were to try to put 6 months of away, you'd need about 30,000. Right now, that means you have about 3 months living expenses. So I could see where, Catherine, you know, with this 55,000, it could be a great opportunity to take that emergency savings up from 15 to 30. I'd put that in a high yield savings where it's protected, not too easily available, but it's there if you had a temporary loss of a job, a major financial setback, or unexpected expense. That'll give you a little bit more peace of mind. With the balance of it, I think the question is, what are your goals? You know, if you're already saving for retirement and you feel like you're on track, I would be asking the question, Lord, is there an area where you want us to do more giving? Are there some medium-term savings goals that are unfunded? And you mentioned you have kids. You know, if you have some kids still at home, are there college-related expenses you need to set aside for? Do you need to replace a car? And would you like to do that with cash, you know, down the road because you don't necessarily have the funds apart from your emergency fund? So those would be the things I would be looking at. And I'd always be evaluating those goals in light of your values, just to say, Lord, what's most important to you and therefore to us? And how can we use this money in a way that glorifies you? So given that, assuming you're on track for retirement, are there any other goals right now that are pressing?
Well, I thought we should put it into our mortgage, but you don't think that is the way we should go?
No, I think that could be a great way to go. Let's do this. I want you to stay on the line. We've got to hit a break here, and then I'd like to talk about that specifically, whether or not to pay down your mortgage, as soon as we come back from this.
This is MoneyWise Live.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm here to help you understand the urgency and how much fun it is to share your faith through the eyes of a layman. In fact, it's the most fun part of being a Christian. There's nothing in the entire human experience that rivals the joy that comes from leading someone to their salvation in Jesus Christ. And you have to do it to know what I'm talking about. But for every person you lead into their salvation experience, there will be multitudes of others where you'll be one of many people moving them closer to Jesus. You can't save anybody, but you can move everybody every day closer to Jesus with the rewards following. The Bible says, "He that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor." What could be more fun than knowing you rescued someone from hell and you just earned yourself a reward in heaven? It's a win-win that makes you want to do it more and more. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
You've probably heard about Adam and Eve when they disobeyed God and sinned against Him. They sewed fig leaves to cover their shame and nakedness. Many of us think we're going to be okay with God, that we'll make it into heaven because of our religion, all the good we've done. But those things are like fig leaves. They can't hide or take away our sin. The Bible says without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness. It took the shedding of the blood of Jesus to cover your sin and mine. And your only hope is putting all your trust in Him. Today's the day to face this hard but life-saving truth. You are not covered without Jesus. You're not ready to meet God. You're not ready for eternity. But you can be from this day on. It's time to admit that the fig leaves of all your goodness and religion and church aren't enough, and that Jesus Christ is your only hope. To learn more, call 888-NEED-HIM. That's 888-NEED-HIM.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
It's MoneyWise Live with Rob West. Just before the break, we were speaking with Catherine in Minnesota. And Rob, I'll let you continue on, sir.
Yeah, Catherine's gotten an inheritance of $55,000. They're on track with retirement savings. They've got about $15,000 in emergency savings. And it sounds like you do have a bit of a mortgage left. I had missed that, Catherine. My apologies. What is the balance on that mortgage?
We've got 10 years left, and the mortgage balance is about $75,000.
Okay. And do you have any other savings goals on the horizon other than retirement?
Not that I'm aware of. You tell me.
Are all the kids out of the house?
No, we do have children at home.
Okay. And what are your thoughts on college savings?
Well, they've been going right into the workforce, and they've been paying their way through the technical colleges. So we help where we can, but...
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, you know, I like the idea of bumping up your emergency savings a bit. Does it mean you have to go from 15 to 30? No, not necessarily. You may settle in at 4 months' expenses or five. But I would put maybe $5,000 minimum toward your emergency savings. And then with the balance, if there's nothing else that you're looking at, like a major expense like college or the replacement of a vehicle down the road where you don't want to have to borrow for it, and you'd want to take some of this money to put toward that where it might be a higher interest rate than you're paying on your mortgage and without the ability to deduct it, then certainly the goal of being completely debt-free, including your mortgage, is one that I love. Either where you target retirement to be completely out of debt, but if you can do it ahead of time, that's great. So if college or a car replacement or something else wasn't a higher priority because it was going to result in debt that carried a higher interest rate, then I would say absolutely. Take the balance, whatever you don't put into your emergency savings, and pay against that mortgage, get even closer to being completely debt-free, including your home. And I think that'd be a wonderful goal.
All righty. Sounds great.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Catherine. Appreciate your call today. God bless you.
Thanks so much. Let's go down to Fort Myers, Florida. Olive, what's your situation and how can we help you?
Hi there. Yeah, I have some bills that I'm paying. Oh, thanks for taking my call, first of all. I have some bills that I'm paying, and I want to pay them down. At age 83, I should not have these bills, but I do because my husband had Alzheimer's and messed up with his bills. So I had to take out thousands of dollars and pay them off because after marriage 60 years, I wasn't going to let his bill stay, even though he passed away. I didn't want to have anybody against him. So I paid them all off against my children's advice. Now, I have a few bills here, and I'd love to pay them off, and I just wanted to find out, what exactly? I hear the talk about a lot. Let me go a little slower because with my accent, you might have a little trouble.
I'm tracking with you, Olive.
I want to pay them all off as soon as possible, and I send extra money out. But I don't have a lot of money. I have $75,000 in investment and $4,000 in savings, for which I take out $500 every month to help my checking account to pay all my bills. I know my daughters will help me if they have to, but I don't want them to. So I just wondered, how should I do this? You know, should I try to pay off the higher interest first, the larger amount first, or you just, you know, some advice as to what would be the best way for me to go for? It's going to take me a few years to pay everything off, but at the same time, I want to really keep going. I just ask the Lord to help me to keep healthy so that I can take care of what I have to take care of.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for that. A couple of follow-up questions. When you say you have some bills to pay, I'm assuming you mean you have some credit card debt. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But I also have other bills to pay, which is my insurance that I have to pay. And, of course, other things,
And what are, other than the $500 you're pulling out every month, which I assume is either coming out of savings or coming out of that investment account, what other income sources do you have?
Savings. Income?
Yeah, Social Security.
I get almost $1,600 for Social Security, $1,590-something, for Social Security. My granddaughter is paying me back $200 a month whenever she is able to, for the car I bought her. And I get like about $150 from my investments monthly because of my age, they have to take it out. And that's what I have, but I'm still thankful to God.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. I certainly understand that. And the $500 a month you're pulling out is coming out of the roughly $4,000 in savings. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I had like $10,000 in it when I sold the house at first, but I helped my daughter also, who will help me when she's able to. One of my girls, so my girls make very good money. My other daughter, so I help her a lot, and I've been helping her for years. But she had a little problem. She's doing much better now, and she's trying to buy a house so that I can give up the apartment because I sold my house and moved to an apartment. So she's trying to buy a house, but I don't want to be involved in her buying the house. I don't want to put any money forward. I would help her like with electricity, but so then I won't have a rent to pay because I'm paying rent right now. So that's going to happen in November.
All right. Last question. How much do you owe on the credit cards?
About $22,000.
Okay. All right, let's do this. You've got a lot of moving pieces. It sounds like you're a generous woman. You've been very helpful to your family. I would, despite the fact that you want to continue to help, I'd be very careful continuing to buy cars for grandchildren and things like that. Right now, we need to get a handle on where you're at. And I do like the idea that perhaps you could drop this monthly apartment rent by living with family, because that would obviously reduce your expenses. I think the thing you need right now is number one, you need a budget. We need to know exactly what's coming in and exactly what's going out for all the various sources, including all the minimum payments on the roughly $22,000 in credit card debt. And then secondly, we need a consistent monthly payment plan to the credit cards that's going to allow you to pay that off in full, but do it out of your monthly cash flow, because 8 months from now, that $4,000 in savings is going to be gone, and you're not going to be able to pull that $500 anymore. So we need to get on a balanced budget, but you need to do it in a way where you're actually making progress on the credit cards, not just covering the interest. So I want you to visit with our friends at Christian Credit Counselors. Olive, do you use the internet?
Everything down. Let me write it down.
Okay. I want you to go to ChristianCreditCounselors.org, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. If you'd rather call them, there'll be a phone number there on the page. There'll be a godly person that'll walk alongside you, first to set up your budget, second to get a detailed listing of all of your credit cards, and then third to evaluate how much they can reduce the interest rates by putting it in a debt management program. Assuming it all works out, and it usually does, you'd have a fixed monthly payment every month that fits into your budget that you'd send to the credit card companies through the credit counseling agency, and you'd have much lower interest rates, which would mean those balances would actually be declining, and that's the key. So I want you to go to ChristianCreditCounselors.org, call them up or connect with them online. Let's see what they can do for you, and then if you have any questions, give us a call back, and we appreciate your call today.
Thank you very much, Olive. Let's quickly go to Munster, Indiana. Zach, go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm feeling a little discouraged right now because I'm in the market to buy my first home, and the homes that I'm interested in are being sold for much more than what the homeowner is asking for.
Yeah.
So my question is should I wait this out? Is it just a trend that's going to, kind of die out in the next maybe year or two, or should I become more aggressive?
Yeah. Zach, I certainly appreciate it. You know, one of the challenges in being a first-time home buyer is, typically you'd benefit from one side of the equation depending on how the market is working. So if you're in a hot market like we're in now, you'd pay a premium to buy a house, but you'd also sell at a premium when you're selling the home. So you get perhaps top dollar for the one you're selling. That allows you to kind of, buy in at top dollar, so to speak. And the converse is true as well. If it's a soft market, you might get less when you sell it, but you'd hopefully not pay a premium to buy something. The problem is you're not able to sell something in order to make this purchase, and so you're coming in without a property. It's just the reality of the situation. Does that mean you shouldn't be an active home buyer? No. I think the key is just recognize the market is what it is. It's been very strong for the last 10 years. Depending on what part of the country you're in, we've been in some of the best real estate markets we've ever seen. I think given what we've faced, though, this year with the pandemic, the significant unemployment, even though the numbers are coming back in terms of people returning to the workforce, we still have millions and millions of Americans without a job. I think that's going to result in a bit of a softening in the real estate market, perhaps not significant, but certainly better than what we've seen the last 3 or 4 years. I think the key is whenever you're buying a house, you always need to decide in advance, how much can I really afford? And you don't want to be forced to go beyond that just because you feel like you're going to miss out. I would be patient. I would have a clear budget in mind. I'd make sure that if you're going to have a mortgage, the mortgage payment isn't more than 25% of your take-home pay, just so you have plenty left to live within your means on everything else. And I'd try to be ready to move very, very quickly, be pre-approved, have your deposit ready, make this a part-time job if you can, and be ready to strike whenever you find something. But don't let this market force you to overpay beyond what's reasonable or to stretch beyond your budget. And I would say, lastly, make it a matter of prayer. Ask the Lord to intervene and show you exactly where he would have you to go.
Thank you, Zach. We're glad that you called today. And Rob, quickly, what is this phenomenon where houses are actually selling for more than the owner is asking?
Yeah, it's just supply and demand, Steve. You know, there's just more people looking to purchase houses in many markets than there is inventory, especially right now in the summer where people are trying to get into homes before the school year starts because they want to get into a particular school district. So as soon as something comes on the market, they're buying it up. Plus, we had a little bit of a downturn in the housing market during the pandemic. And now as people are out, they're starting to buy again, which is further reducing the inventory. It's just the ebb and flow of the real estate market.
Thanks, Rob. Do appreciate that. Hope you and yours have a great weekend. And thank you for tuning in and listening today. MoneyWise Live is a partnership between Moody Radio and MoneyWise Media. My thanks to our production crew, Judy, Aaron, Amy, and of course, Jim Henry. Have a great weekend. God bless.